The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Hey, welcome back to another Mission Minded. I'm Tony Curry, along with the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. What are you smirking about over there, Michael Coleman?
I'm laughing myself. I never look at my camera right.
You're a funny guy. We talk about business around here. I got several emails, info@tonycurryradio.net. Great story about a person who had $2,000 and turned it into a $100 million a year business. I want to talk about that a little bit, which I think is amazing because everyone's like, you know, it's funny. But we'll start right there. First of all, I hope you're doing well. Second of all, everyone's always looking for the quick, easy scheme, you know, the penny stock, whatever it is. Everybody wants to make the quick money. And because of the internet, there is the idea out there, and we've seen these things happen over and over and over again. Again, if it seems too good to be true, not 99% of the time, 100% of the time, it is too good to be true. It doesn't matter what it is in your life. It seems too good to be true. It is too good to be true. Unless, you know, you bought the lottery ticket and you're sitting there looking at it. Okay.
Yeah.
And so because of the internet and all the different ways you can make income there, everyone's got this, I hate this word, side hustle. I hate the side hustle. Everybody wants to make the side hustle, whether it's a Ponzi scheme, whether you're selling Amway, whether you're selling essential oils, whether you're whether you're a real estate agent on the side. I mean, how many different jobs are there? You know, how many different ways can I go here? And what it comes down to
is, you know, the legal side hustles. Yeah. You get into the illegal side hustles.
Oh yeah. I know someone that's making $50,000-$60,000 on the side, and you know she only works on weekends. And I'm like, really? Okay. Well, then they try it. Next thing you know, you're taking a couple classes, you're in over your head, you know, you're selling, you know, stuff at the Brass Bear, you know, and I'm like, these people have been doing it for 30 years. You know, they know what they're doing. And
there's some people with side hustles that are selling other things.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I see that Poshmark and that commercial and I'm like, you know, the good looking girl, and I'm going to sell that. I'm going to sell that. I'm going to sell that. And, you know, and you're throwing your crap onto a website in hopes of someone, it's eBay glamorized. And it's like, and people think they're going to make millions of dollars. So I've gotten a couple of friends of mine that have actually thought, they actually went to one of these free dinner things at a hotel where they had to sit for a 3-hour seminar on how they can use their internet for no more than 30 minutes a day and make $100,000 a year doing it.
Of course.
And I'm like, or they show up and it's a seminar about how to flip homes. It's all this bull crap. And it drives me crazy because there are outliers in everything. There are people that actually make millions and millions of dollars doing these types of businesses, but they're so far and few between, and they're people that really are cut from a different mold, that they just get after it. And so in this particular case is a woman who had $2,000. Her name's Nicole Wegman. She's founder of the jewelry company Ring Concierge, which I've heard of. And she was frustrated after a search for an engagement ring. And so she decided to start her own business. And now this business, which is, by the way, 20 something years old, she's now making over $100 million a year. So you read the story and it's like, wow, that's fantastic. And it does happen. I know these things. I don't even know what the question here that I want to ask you is, but I know that a lot of people want to start businesses. Right now we're in, and COVID probably had a lot to do with this, we have more people starting their own businesses now than we ever had in the history of the United States of America. I don't know what the numbers are. It's like 100,000 new businesses every single year. You probably have a better idea, a grasp of some of the numbers about how many actually fail, how many are successful, and why they do fail and why they are successful. But talk about that aspect of it, because I don't know if there's any really new ideas out there right now. I just think they're ideas that we already have that someone's taken and tried to make the idea better.
Yeah. So,
and by the way, before I go, this Lume thing, the deodorant, the all deodorant thing, I keep seeing these commercials for deodorant thing is the biggest fiasco. I don't know how it works better than a shower. I don't know why you would want to use something for 72 hours. That means you're not showering for 3 days at a time, which sounds disgusting. I don't know. I don't know anyone that told me that my backside stunk so bad that I needed to put a pea-sized stuff and wipe it between the crack of my behindy or underneath my boobs. Yeah. And now there's Mando, which of course is the same thing for men. And I'm like, who are these people that don't shower for 3 days? And again, they're selling it based off the fear that we stink. You know, the oh my gosh, do I really smell during the day? And I need to put some of this on my armpits or else I'm not. And it's just, it's almost like you put enough money behind anything and you could sell it to the United States public. You know, if you put the fear of God in them, say, listen, you're going to stink if you don't use this product. It's amazing. Yeah. It's incredible. Yeah. Every time I see it, I laugh. I'm like, are you serious? Do people actually buy this stuff? And they are. She's a millionaire.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Very successful. So when you look at, when you said there's no new products. I will say that there's no new pathways to success, because one of the things I love about our country, I've stated on previous shows, is that you don't have to wait for somebody to give you a job. You can create your own. And there are stories, like you said, somebody starting out of their garage, Microsoft starting out of the garage, you know, Apple, all that kind of stuff. The problem is there's a couple of different things. Number one is the person who is involved. So the vast majority of people, when they think do my own business, is because they want convenience. They want autonomy. They don't want to go in and report to anybody and so-called work for the man. They want to work for themselves. But the vast majority of people, so when they have that attitude, then they go out and they try to just take hold of something and then make it successful. That's not the essence of where these stories come from. The ones that I've seen do that is when they have identified a gap in services or a gap in essentials, or how we define essentials, mm-hmm. you know, things that people would want. And that lots of times the average person doesn't think about, because for instance, if we were sitting there and I'm like, oh, I wish I had this kind of convenience, our minds don't then latch on. Well, how could I do that? How could I design that? How could I market, you know, like to take it? And sometimes we don't even realize until we see somebody come along with an idea and they present and they go, oh, that's brilliant. It's very simple, but it's brilliant. But the kind of people who do that are the kind of people who have determination. They understand from a bigger perspective how it fits into the overall picture. And so it's not necessarily that they are brilliant. It's that they have either a product, or what they can do is utilize. You see so many like technology companies come out and they're like, okay, here's a gap. Okay, so I can use technology to create this convenience. And it may be a convenience for a business. It may be, I mean, it's in everything. Like ADP mm-hmm. comes along. They do our payroll processing. And it's because they're responsible for all the laws. They're responsible for calculating that. They're responsible for all of those things. And then what they do is they just bring in a bunch of companies and just take that headache off of them. But they're just using, you know, technology and software. So different applications of that. So people are able to look over the landscape and say, hey, I really wish we had this. But like most people, I could sit down and I can point out several things that I think are good ideas and software or gaps that would be convenient. But then taking it from there and then putting the whole formula together is incredibly difficult. You have to be persistent. You have to believe in the idea. You have to be committed to it. You have to have a certain level of business acumen to be able to get your idea through that process. And sometimes it's not a product. Sometimes it's a pathway of things that already exist, but it's just a way to maneuver to ease. Because think about how much money is in this. We are so wealthy, especially compared to the other world.
that we spend money on, most of our money are spent on conveniences, just making our lives easier. So if I can come up with a way to make the average person's life easier and get it to their phone where they can solve a problem in their life, whatever, it doesn't matter what the problem is. So I'm just solving a problem. I'm not bringing a product. I'm just creating technology that does that. And that happens. So you hear stories like the 2000, and this millionaire lady who has convinced us that we need to be putting scented cream in our butt cheeks because, you know, for whatever reason. But I think there was Secret, who, even when I was a little kid, I remember the slogan for Secret on commercials. So, I mean, I'm 58. I remember as a child, there were Secret commercials. Mm-hmm. And it was strong enough for a man, but made for a woman.
Yep.
Everybody knows that. Okay. So Secret is not Johnny Come Lately, but Secret now has commercials that I've seen that go, it's an all body deodorant.
Yep.
You put deodorant over
everybody. Everybody does. Everyone, all of a sudden, they see this. And you know, I mean, every commercial I tune in, I see this gynecologist doing this commercial, and it's just amazing to me. And I'm thinking to myself, as a person who started my own business as well, and I know you have, and I'm currently working on some inventions, some ideas, and it's not, you know, pipe dream stuff, it's formulated, but. You know, I had to think about, okay, I believe in this, but how do I sit in front of somebody, an investor, because most people don't have millions of dollars to formulate or make a hybrid or do whatever they want to do to create this idea. How do you sell that? How in the world could this woman?
In and of itself, somebody's coming along and goes, you know what? There's lots of inventors out there, but they don't have a pathway to get that in front of people with money. So I'll just create the pathway. I'll just connect the inventor. So you see things like InventHelp, and you see other companies out there that have been formed. Again, they're not necessarily bringing a product. They're bringing know-how and then linking two communities. You've got inventors and you've got people who want to invest, investors, people with money. And all they're doing is linking those two things together. But it's added value. So anything, so it could be a product, it could be a service, it could be whatever that people, and, you know, I think about going back, so this is kicking it really old school. This guy had the windshield wipe. He invented for Ford, I think it was. I might be getting some aspects of the story straight. He ended up suing Ford because of the intermittent wipers. He invented the intermittent wiper, and then Ford just absorbed it. But anyway, he ended up getting $450 million or something just for that invention. And we think, well, as a concept, yeah, that's easy because we all can relate to that of sitting there going, was barely sprinkling. I need to run my wipers. I can turn them off and on, but I don't want to just go for hours turning them off and on. So at intermittent. So again, it become, that's a ubiquitous concept now. But at one time, it took somebody to say, here's a thought. How could we make that happen? Develop the technology. That's not the average person. The average person is the one who will use the product because it's convenient, not the person who goes to the trouble to invent the idea and see it through to the end. So when people say, I want to start my own business, and there's a huge franchising, again, that's a subculture of people who, you know, you don't go anymore to the headquarters of a company. It's like these middle people now who are like, oh, I can sell all the franchises for you, whatever. But people go, and I get it. You're successful if you're like, hey, I want to start a Krispy Kreme. There's territories and all that. You buy the territory, you do your thing, but it requires hard work. It requires initial investment and it requires all that kind of stuff. The average person who doesn't have that kind of money to invest in a large company like that just goes, well, you know, I'll become a realtor, or, you know, where I have max flexibility. or I'll just start my own company with something I think I'm good at. I'll be a handyman. I'll do whatever. But what you find is the reason they might make some money, but typically they don't grow is because when you run a business, there's so many aspects to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's the advertising, there's the customer service, so I'll just give you a quick example. You might have somebody who's a very skilled carpenter, all right? And they're always in demand and they can charge $50 an hour to come to your house and fix your staircase or whatever, you know? But the problem is people say, well, hell, I can't ever get in touch with them.
Yep.
Because he's not managing his customer base. I know of people who they will finally get a contractor out to the site and they'll do it. But let's say they got to call and the contractor goes, yeah, I got to go back out. Matter of fact, I have a friend right now who had windows put in, and there was one where they had to cut a hole. It wasn't like replacing the window. They had to cut a hole in. And so they put the window in, but they didn't trim it out. And he said, well, come back. Well, for him to come back, and they said they're having trouble getting in touch with him to get back just to put the trim into that one window, because when he did the big job, well, now he's gone on to his other stuff, more profitable. For him to take a half a day to come back, pull all of his equipment out, put the trim in on both sides, you know, it's just not very profitable. So he's risking his reputation,
mm-hmm.
but his demand may be so high because there's not enough people doing that.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. So what I'm saying all that to say, there's just so few people who understand the service. You have the customer service, the actual product or the service that you're providing, how to manage reputation, how to do all of that. But it's possible if you come in, you're driven and you understand those things and you learn and you're committed. It's just so many people. So few people have all of those coming in combined. And that's why success is more rare on the individual level like that. You have somebody who's a jewelry maker you just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
They can come put that together and they're so creative. So now they get people who make jewelry. They still can do the creation, but they're not the ones who are actually having to build it and do all that. So they can mass produce things. Again, those are the people that go on and create the $100 million company. And then you have somebody like K Jewelers or somebody like that comes along and buys that brand out.
Yep.
You know, and that's oftentimes what happens. If you create something technology-wise, typically the Microsofts or the larger come along that are like, oh, this is successful. You've already done the hard work getting it all stood up. They're like, okay, we're ready to mass produce this. We'll just come buy them out. And so many people get bought out
Amazon does that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I mean, I've heard these stories a million times where a business will come in, they'll have a great deal. Their prices are super. They'll go on Amazon because you have to go on Amazon. And if you want your stuff to be sold, it's got to be sold on Amazon. And as soon as it starts making money, you'll get it at a really cheap rate. And Amazon will buy them out. Then they pop the rate up. And next thing you know, that product's gone.
Well, I had a guy call me today, on Wednesday. I went and had lunch with him and he's wanting to start a nonprofit. And so I have a lot of people because they know I started a nonprofit from an idea and I built it from scratch. So they're like, okay, I cannot begin to tell you the number of people who come to me want to start a nonprofit based on an idea. Now, this is the same concept, which is I'm going to go to where I'm going to create something and lead it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Even though it's a nonprofit, it's still a business. And so I sit down with them and I tell them right away, I'm not going to pump sunshine up your skirt, but I'm going to give you a realistic picture of what you're facing in hopes of, if you're not committed to this idea or you don't, you know, that you're not going to waste time, you're not going to waste money and everything else. And I would say 95% of the people I talk to, when they realize all this involved, they don't go through with it.
Yeah.
And I even tell them, if you're willing to go through with it, I'll be there to help guide you and, you know, coach you and all that. But then, you know, most of the time I don't hear from them again because the idea fades. They get enthusiastic about an idea And they're like, oh, yeah, I can make this work. And then reality punches them in the face. And they've already invested money, or they've committed, or they quit their job wanting to do it. And now they're like, okay, what do I do? There's a lot of struggling. That is the norm. And that's why first-time businesses, it's well over 80% of first-time businesses fail.
Yeah.
Just people don't count the cost. They don't have anybody to go to say, you know, their friends all tell them, oh, I love that idea. Oh, yeah, that product. I know like a Krispy Kreme. Oh, I love Krispy Kreme. Oh, well, if everybody loves Krispy Kreme, let me go open up a Krispy Kreme.
Mm-hmm. You know, if it was that easy, everyone would do it. And
exactly.
You know, yeah, that's true. What would you say to somebody? Because, again, I don't know of any new ideas. And again, I'll use Harry's Shave Club. It's another one of these companies that, you know, we bought the company. Two guys in their 20s who obviously had a trust fund decided to fly to Germany and go buy the actual building where they make these blades for Gillette or whoever. And instead of spending $7 a blade, they're going to sell them for only $2 because it's direct business to you. Mail thing where they send you the blades. And of course it's part of a club where you spend $5 a month and they send you your blades every 3 months or whatever. And you never have to leave the house and blah, blah, blah. And now there's like 100 different shave clubs. Now everyone's got a shave club. And then even like Gillette, you know, now they got Gillette Labs, which is somewhat along. Yeah. So it made them change. And I guess that's the ultimate compliment when you get a company that large, when you get Bob Kraft to actually say, holy crap. They're copying the small guy, the little guy idea.
Yeah.
But when you sit down with an investor, you sit down with an idea for something like that, and you just have an existing idea, but you think you can do it better. Well, you know, we're doing the same thing. An interesting point, and I'm glad we're going this. I read yesterday, and I don't know if this has anything to do with this, but it's another idea that is going. There are, I don't know how many dollar stores there are in this country right now. You know this as well as I do, that one of the reasons there's so many dollar stores is because there's so many rural areas where people just can't get anything, and it's cheap dollar crap, okay, for the most part. Not everything is a dollar. But for the most part, you can certainly go in there. So as of yesterday, $5,000 general stores are now selling fresh produce. And so they had some guy on from Idaho who's 15 miles away from his closest grocery store. And he's like, oh my gosh, I had organic mushrooms last night because I went to my Dollar General and I got mushrooms, you know? And again, it's not like a Publix where, you know, you have a whole wall of stuff, but you got fresh produce and they're talking about doing that for another 1500 stores. So they're seeing a need and they're bringing that in, and that's, I get it. It's a great idea. So they're obviously taking an idea and thinking we can do it better. I as a business person, still can't figure out how in the world Dollar Generals make any money. I don't know how it works. Maybe you do.
Well, let me tell you, it's interesting because, as our listeners know, I work with Food Bank, and we actually work very closely with Dollar General. We have a Dollar General distribution. It's primarily here in Montgomery, dairy products. Mm-hmm. But we've been looped in for the last year and a half in their move towards this. And I was driving down to Florida, and I bet I passed 3 Dollar General markets. So if you know Walmart, grocery stores are inside of the super Walmarts. Well, then sometimes you have a Walmart marketplace, you know, with just a little grocery store. So what Dollar General did, and I actually think it's brilliant, because the vast majority of our population is rural, and especially in, you know, we cover 25,000 square miles here in Alabama across 35 counties. We have a couple of, you know, you have Auburn, you have Montgomery, but the rest are all small towns, you know, less than 10,000. And kind of typically won't support a grocery store. And so you can't sling a dead cat in Alabama without hitting a Dollar General. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you're just out in the country sometimes and just farmland, and you're just riding, and all of a sudden you'll see a Dollar General on, you know, country road kind of thing. But, you know, they don't invest tons in employees. That's why lots of times you go in there and Really? You'll see like you'll see it looks messy at times. Yeah. It looks like the person checking you out may also be stocking the shit. I mean, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. But what they've done is they've said, hey, there are food deserts out here, and that first of all, there's a need for fresh produce. There's a free, there's a need for milk. There's a, you know, fresh dairy, all that kind of stuff. So they're filling a niche because a Publix or a Walmart grocery store, they, when they go to look, where's a store go, they have to have a certain amount of population. So they're never going to fill that. So there it is, and you do it at a small store level, like you said, in small products of fresh stuff. But if that's your model to where a delivery truck is not dumping it all at one, but is going to 10 and delivering them, they're hugely successful, which again is increasing their bottom line. It's just a way to expand their business, or they're squeezing more juice.
Well, and I'm glad you explained it to me, because I heard that there's a new Dollar General being built, or a dollar store, some type of dollar store being built like every 3 seconds or something, or there's one being opened every 3 seconds in this country. And again, there will be a time where there's just too many, like golf courses, yeah. and they'll have to start shutting them down but when you're setting up shop in rural America, you don't have to worry about the rent. You don't have to worry about the land. You don't have to worry because it's in the middle of a farm. You're right. I mean, it's amazing.
There's literally no competition out there. And in so many of these Dollar Generals, they provide such a use. Now, let me distinguish real quick. There's a chain like Family Dollar.
Yeah.
And then, dollar only, things like that. Dollar General is different. Their products are not a dollar. They do carry name brand stuff, but some off brand stuff. But it's like the old kind of general store model where it doesn't have great variety, but it's got something of a little bit of everything mm-hmm. that you need for kitchen. It's got towels, but it's not going to have 10 different kinds of towels. It may have two different kinds. It has stuff that you need if you're moving into an apartment. It has some food. You know what I'm saying? So if you think about it, it's just like a small little general store. But their model, those are the ones who are investing in these marketplaces. And they're killing it right now. And, we mock, you know, I've seen memes where you have astronauts on the moon and there's a Dollar General store
yeah.
already there when they get there. But the truth of the matter is that it serves a huge need, because a large company like that can bring fresh produce, rather than just a mom and pop owner who have one little store, they would have to mark it up so high as to be able to make a profit. And that's what happens with like local gas stations out in the country, mm-hmm. and things like that. A Dollar General brings that corporate buying power, and they can get lower margins because they've got more stores. And yes, you could look at it from, well, that pushes the mom and the pop out. But I'm talking about people in rural area who battle poverty issues. The Dollar Generals are the lifesavers oftentimes in those cases.
Yeah, and it's funny because they do have to pick their spots. But I mean, a lot of municipalities like Hoover, they don't want them because they say, first of all, it's going to drop their land values because it brings yeah. in a certain type of culture. And again, I mean, I don't know too many people that don't like to go to a Dollar General. My kids love yeah. Dollar General because you can usually get in there and get $10 worth of crap or whatever it is. I mean, if you're talking about getting a gift for your daughter's friend, we're going to Dollar General. It was funny. She needed a white t-shirt for something for school. Just a white t-shirt. And I was like, she's like, we're going to go to Macy's or we're going to JCPenney. I said, they probably got them at Dollar General. Sure enough, they had a whole box of white plain t-shirts for a dollar a piece. And I was like, here's all the white t-shirts you want. Hey, before we let you go, something else, since we're talking about this, life is cyclical and it's interesting how things move around. Whenever you see a Walgreens now, you're going to see a Rite Aid and a CVS on opposite corners. And that sounds ridiculous, and I don't know why they do that. I mean, I do, but I don't, because inevitably, within a certain period of time, one of those stores, if not both of those stores, is going to close down and one's going to win. We're seeing that with Publix right now. Publix is going in and kicking Winn-Dixie's butt. And everywhere there's been a Winn-Dixie, yeah. I see Publix.
Well, Winn-Dixie's actually been bought by Aldi now.
Yeah, well,
Aldi.
And there's one down here on Morgan Road, and I went in there, and the place is empty, and I'm like, well, what's going on? They're like, we got bought out by Aldi, and I'm like, really? So it's evidently it's not a win-win, even though they're running commercials. But it seems like to me, maybe just recently, that there's been a resurgence of local pharmacy stores. I'm seeing Mills Pharmacy. I'm seeing maybe it's because they're advertising, but they're bringing back that small town pharmacy, everyone knows each other feel. And I did a little research, and there are more local pharmacy stores now opening up, as opposed to
which used to be the model. When I was a kid, there were no chain pharmacies.
Yeah.
There were like the Rexall drug brands, and you'd have a family owned drugstore and it would say a Rexall drugstore. Mm-hmm. But the chain didn't order. It was just that that was the drug. I think the drug company that produced the medicine.
They'd have ice cream machine there. We had a place called Mulberg's. Yeah. A good friend of mine, Mulberg's.
Yeah, everyone was different.
We used to go there every day. We go to the drugstore. That's where we used to hang out at the drugstore.
Well, there's so much competition because you think about, and there's something specifically that I heard in the news about CVS and the Walmart and this model you're talking about. But think about it. Every single drugstore, so Walmart does it, but all the grocery stores have pharmacies now. And so people will go to that if I can pick up my medication while I'm also at the grocery store, mm-hmm. that kind of convenient. And that's why drugstores start expanding. And sometimes you'll see a drugstore offer some things like milk and, you know, some convenience thing, bread, things that you might run out of that you could pick up just to make again. But one of the challenges that they're having now, and it has nothing to do with drugs, but you see a lot, there's been an announcement of shutting down a lot of those stores, and it's not a competition problem. It's a theft problem. More and more, especially in the lower income neighborhoods, they're getting more and more theft. So what you begin to see is some of the more common products, you know, it's always been the history. You put them behind the counter, sure. like cigarettes and all that. Well, there's just so much you can put behind the counter. So you see it in Walmart when you go to the technology section, they have certain things behind locked glass, computers and everything else. Well, that's where these stores are going. Well, then you also have to have the people to lock and unlock and all that. I mean, so that's higher cost of labor. That's, you know, because you're trying to offset the theft. And a lot of places are just saying, hey, the headaches dealing with individuals, bringing people in, keeping employees, entry-level employees and stuff, you know, to check out, all that is just too big of a hassle. We'll just, you know, we're not making enough. We'll just close that store down and save that money. I foresee and talk about an idea. It's already out there. But I foresee where you're going to walk into some places and the whole thing is going to be nothing but one big vending machine to where the whole store, to where everything is going to be behind locked glass. And if you want it, you're going to pay cash, credit card or whatever, punch a button, and then you're going to get cold medicine or you're going to get this or you're going to get that. And, you know, they've had vending machines forever. You know, I remember growing up, the old vending machines for cigarettes, you put the coins in and it'd have a pull handle, mm-hmm. you know, and it would drop down. Now the technology's got, but with the technology, I mean, you could see something that would be down an entire store wall, all the sensitive items under glass to protect it. That's where it's going. So the people in that space are like, hey, is there a company that's making these right now? That might be a company I want to invest in.
Vending machines?
Yeah. Or like the large the large.
Well, they've already got, like, you know, at Home Depot and Lowe's, they got the lockers. There's already a situation where you can stop and pick up. Pizza places got them now, where you go in Domino's. You don't have to talk about a Domino's. You order it and it's put in a shelf. You have to put a key code in and you pull so it's a vending machine for a pizza. It's not a bad idea. I mean, it's certainly
it's going more because the loss and you see these, it's really a societal problem where you see these groups will come in, these packs of people, 10, 15, 20, and overwhelm a store to where they're just going to go in, they're going to raid everything and go out. I've seen it done at gas stations. I've seen it done at jewelry stores where they, you know, and you're helpless to do anything about it. And that's why if you look, there's probably the worst situation that's out there is in Oakland, California. You know, Oakland's already had become very impoverished, but businesses are fleeing out of there because the policy is you really can't do anything. And so you're a business owner. Why would I invest in that? Somebody come in and steal everything I got. I can't protect my own stuff. I can't do business there. The police force is not, I mean, the whole city government is like, no, just let them take what they want and you're not going to arrest them. You're not going to prosecute them. You're not going to do all that. And now, you know, that's been going on for a while with them. Same problems in San Francisco. So they're starting to reap that. So businesses are like, hey, I've got to do something from the very beginning that's going to address that. And chains are doing that. So some chains are shutting down. It's horrible for impoverished communities because I get the risk are higher. That's the bottom line. But if it's in fairness to the business owner, a business owner or a corporation doesn't owe any community anything.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to protect their interest, why do they owe it to you to come into a community? So I see both sides of the argument. It's a real shame because those jobs aren't coming. The services aren't there. But it's because it's dangerous and it's high theft and they lose money. Just all the things that go into it. So when you look at going all the way back to what we originally started talking about, which was people coming in with ideas, how do you go in? You're like, okay, look, this is a problem. It's been a problem forever. What is one possible way of solving that? And if you just imagine walking in and seeing a 30 to 40 foot row of one gigantic vending machine and all the way down, may not solve all the problems, but it certainly prevents the grab, the snatching out the door.
Yeah. I didn't really think about that. And I think the other interesting thing too is to go along with the smash and grab is now all of a sudden we don't have self checkouts. They're totally reversing the self checkout. I was at 7-Eleven yesterday
because of that.
And the woman standing behind the counter and she's like, place your stuff underneath the light. And I placed my stuff on it. And she goes, just follow the prompter. And I said, you're standing right there. You could check me out. And you know, the old man in me came out. I said, I want you to check me out. She's like, I can't check you out. And I was like, I said, so you're here to tell us how to check ourselves out. So because eventually you're not going to be here. That's the only reason. So if there's nobody in the store, then you could just grab whatever you want and split.
Well, I'll tell you an interesting caveat to that is, so Walmart's like, we don't have to hire anybody. I'll just use Walmart. Many stores do it. Yeah. We'll have all these open, you know, where everybody does it. And then I don't have to pay people and benefits and all that. So it saves over there, but you're going to have increased theft. And so then they were talking about, and it's so silly, but I think it could work because we are so married to our convenience. We want convenience over everything else, but they were talking about, and I don't know where they are in the process of selling memberships. It would be like $7 a month, $10 a month, something there. To have a privilege of self-checkout. So you couldn't self-checkout. You're not going to be able to self-checkout.
That is hilarious.
Unless you are paying for the privilege. Because that way people who would be stealing are not going to pay for that. They have to go through the line.
I still can't believe we sit there and talk about, and then we'll let you fly, about how broke we are and how expensive things are and inflation. yet someone will pay someone to go pick up a Big Mac and fries and a Coke and have it delivered to their apartment and spend another $5 on delivery. I just blows my mind. Grubhub and all those store. I just cannot figure that out. I cannot believe that we have a society now where Kroger, who doesn't even have stores in this part of the country, are delivering groceries here. It is the most bizarre thing to me, because I'm thinking to myself, how in the world are they making money? And obviously there's a theme there, and there's a way for them to actually, it's crazy. All right. We do another show called Bite by Bite, and it airs right after this one on Tony Curry Radio. It runs at least 5 days a week. And of course, wherever you get your podcast, you can watch it right here, along with the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, right here on our wonderful YouTube channel. What are we going to be talking about on Bite by Bite, our next episode? Can you tell me?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about something that we're putting together that I'm not sure is being done anywhere in the food banking system.
Nice.
If it is, it is not talked about, but it's related to, you know, when you live in the big cities, a delivery system. We're talking about like the Grubhub and everything else. Food banks can even tap into that. And have delivery like to shut-ins and things like that.
Oh, that's good.
But there's no system like that for rural. And so we're talking about setting up a system for that rural kind of delivery for specific people, for our food as medicine, where it gets into the elderly, the shut-ins, the disabled who are in these food deserts who do not have the ability to get out of the house.
All right.
And are just kind of trapped there. So we're very excited about it. We're in the very infancy of thinking it out, but we're very excited about the possibilities.
Can't wait to talk about it. We'll do it next here on Tony Curry Radio. Have yourself a great week, my friend.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Thank you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.